of Parliament, toothless power, and accountability. Has the 7th administration become better at holding the executive accountable? Joining me for the conversation today is Mr. Wayne Duvenage, the founder of Outer and Mandela Washington fellow and writer Siya Khumalo, to talk about, as South Africans, have we become better or worse at holding Parliament and politicians more accountable? Gentlemen, it's an early morning. Thank you for coming through. I'm excited to have this conversation and really more of a conversation than a contestation of ideas ever. Because are we seeing a new iteration of how parliamentary processes work? And the reason the two of you are here is because you're very vocal about accountability, about who says what, and about the issues that come up, not just in Parliament, but politics across the globe. So let's start with you. Wayne, do you think that this 7th administration is working better and doing better at holding the executive accountable and delivering to the peoples?
I think so. There's still a long way to go. So it's, but the shakeup is there just purely because, just the one glaring obvious thing is that there isn't this majority, one party process or situation that allows the ANC to get its way. And we saw that play out in the budget session. The ANC had a majority, we would have had a 2% VAT increase. Simply, that's one way you can put it, and that didn't happen. So there's a lot more negotiation that has to happen. But that doesn't stop the tensions, and that doesn't mean that our government of national unity is on a smooth road. It's a rocky road, and it's a lot of work to keep it on that road. And we've seen, comes close to be derailed from time to time. But I think that's all hot air. So
you think it's hot air?
There's a lot of politics still at play. So while this word unity is not necessarily there, it's they have to argy-bargy and fight and tussle a lot in the back rooms, I imagine, and even in Parliament, as we've seen. So it's better than what we've had. But are they holding people accountable?
See, I laugh at that. Is it better than what you laugh at that?
Let's let Wayne finish.
No, I'll stop there. Let's see how we go forward, though. That's the important thing.
You laugh at that. It's better than what we've had.
So I agree with a lot of what Wayne just said. But if we look at which issues was, it was the budget. And it was now John Steenhuisen of the DA saying that there'll be major repercussions if President Ramaphosa doesn't, this was a few weeks ago, didn't fire ministers just as he fired his one minister, et cetera, et cetera, for questioning, I don't even remember the topic, but I know that.
Nkabani, yeah.
Yes.
The higher education.
Yeah.
Yes. The fault lines where I'm starting to see them, and it's very similar to what we had in the last, let's call it three administrations. I mean, we were discussing where it all really, and it comes down to the fact that politicians, and I'm thinking about Parliament in particular, politicians exist like many other organizations to look after the interests of their donors and then the interests of their beneficiaries or constituents. So the interests of the taxpayers compete often with the interests of party donors. So a lot of governance revolves around protecting or trying to blind us all about that split. So when I look at the tensions and the fights in this particular government, that's what I'm looking for. In April, a party that shall go unnamed, Rise and Sons, a party that shall go unnamed, hosted an event in Rosebank. I think it was April. And I went there, and I hope somebody has a recording of this, because I will say things and people will be like, you need receipts. And because Usongezo started explaining why Rise voted a certain way with regards to Judge John Thorpe. And he said that they knew that, okay, we can negotiate for Scopa Che if we allow this to Judge John Thorpe. And with the budget, his reasoning was very much, something has to get passed sooner or later. Like it's you can we can stand, you can grandstand until the cows come home, but there has to be a budget. But the sense I was getting was the horse trading is beginning. Mm-hmm. Where the ANC is big.
So do you think that means that we have actually, essentially, Cyril Ramaphosa in this cabinet and in putting together this kind of coalition has weakened opposition to him and the things that he's doing? I happen to believe
he's absorbed
that
it.
He's about to be the first president since Nelson Mandela who's going to finish his term in office because he's got a coalition in this way.
He's absorbed. So
absorbed the opposition.
He's basically got the smaller parties campaigning for the ANC. But they are. And I don't know if they realize it because they make excuses. So what Action SA and a lot of other parties did around the budget, I don't remember which parties did what, but I got the sense that you are now actually offering an apology. You're doing PR for the majority party, whether you realize it or not. What are you going to sound like when you have to campaign for yourselves?
Because the same. What does this do for accountability?
Yeah, because.
Yeah, look, I you can hear the debates are still robust. There is still a lot of tension, and the DA is marketing its way through this. You just see the adverts that are put out, and this is what McPherson has done and saved 400 million rand stopping this tender and that tender. So they're competing. I think they're using their opportunities heading up various ministries to show what they can do. And I guess if you're talking the DA and ANC being the two big parties that are contesting here, they're going to use the opportunities to show each other up. And I think that's why the DA wants to remain, and they will remain as long as they can because they can show what good governance looks like. Not everybody sees that when you're sitting in Limpopo, in Gauteng, you don't visit the Western Cape to visually see the difference in how cities and towns are run, or provinces are run. You get a sense that this is what it is, and you get used to it. But we shouldn't. So I don't think they've been usurped. But I hear what you're saying. They're having to toe the line because they've got to work together. And you can see that they're not going to contest certain things. And I guess this is the matrix of politics, and this is where they trip up themselves from time to time. You'll say one thing. And we saw that with Action SA here just in local government. We're in a coalition of unity, and then as that comes to reality within a few months, it's gone, it's broken. They're now in the pockets or the
pockets.
Siding with the ANC and the EFF in Tshwane. Yeah, so it's, as they always say, a week's a long time in politics.
Yeah, a day is a long time in South Africa, because even as we have this conversation today, we're watching the machinations around the police minister play out. And what's been said and now with the MK taking the president to the Constitutional Court to say, is he allowed to do this? And the MK, surprisingly, have become a very vocal opposition.
Just as the EFF was.
Just as the EFF was. And what motivates that, most of the time as we watch it, is there a puppet master in Jacob Zuma somewhere in the back still having a fight with Cyril Ramaphosa?
That won't end.
No, it can't. It can't. So if I may just jump in, what Wayne said about the DA's holding its identity and its ground, I think is absolutely true. They are aware that in, let's call it a year from now, they'll have to campaign. And so a lot of their messaging now anticipates that. But on your point with the MK and the ANC, President Zuma now has a golden opportunity to show President Ramaphosa that, look, when I use the same weapons against you, this is what it feels like. The same accountability mechanisms, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. I think he's loving being in the opposition in a certain sense.
Yeah, he's taking every opportunity to show Cyril up, definitely.
And what has this, in your view, as you watch it all play out, as people who watch politics and our politicians. What of the EFF? Co-guarded.
What are you saying? Because I just see not quite a cope. Are they going to be around in 10 years' time? All the trajectories, as they've lost a lot to MK, even their own members. And they will hang in. But a party built around an individual is a worry, you know, and that's MK's problem as well.
Yes.
In some of the recent elections, by-elections, in KZN, they haven't gained. So it's going to be very interesting, these next local elections, 18 months from now, when we sit back and count and see the trends. But I don't know. What about you?
Because you are traditionally their target audience of everyone in the room. You are their traditional target audience.
I am the target audience. What they've never been able to solve. They've never been able to solve two problems. Where does government money come from? And who decides how it gets spent? It sounds like they've solved the problem. They talk about land expropriation, but that actually cuts a lot of other funding sources because your investors will go, ah. Mm. Like, we all know this. So it sounds, it ideologically, it sounds like a great crusade for justice, but practically speaking, we all know that you can only play so many cards at a time. So then they play their other tactic, which is disruption in parliament, point of order, this, that, the other. And now you're not getting any discussions being concluded. And I think a lot of us felt if you're the adult in the room, then we're in trouble. Because the job of the adult in the room is to get the conversation to go through and make sense, not to disrupt the conversation from the get-go.
Yeah. And we've seen they've changed their tack on that whole disruption.
Space. Yeah.
Too little, too late.
Yeah.
You think it's too little too late?
It's too little too late. They now have to come up with a whole other formula that speaks to procurement and how, back to me as the target audience, tell me how I can access the tender sphere without having to sell my soul and be corrupt. Because government contracts are the quickest way to, or one of the quickest ways to grow wealthy in this country.
Yeah.
Tell me how I can do that without becoming corrupt, without selling my soul to a party or a party leader. Yeah. To give
that's
value.
The dilemma, huh?
Yes.
That's the dilemma that so many have. You know, how many people, this was a discussion that somebody was having in a training session with councillors at a municipal level, and they were explaining the process. This is how governance works. And an individual sitting there saying, I came into this role to get rich.
Yay!
That's that. I thought that I have an opportunity to eat. And he said, but no, here's the governance. You should not, there should be no conflicts of interest. Your friends and family cannot get contracts. No. That's not what I understood, he said.
Yeah,
that's it.
And do you think that in this administration, I mean, the one thing that we have definitely seen with the highest number of political parties represented in this iteration of an administration, you also have a lot more faces. Basically to continue.
And some youth coming through, which is
some great. Young people coming through, and I hear what you're saying, but every time I see that Sihlelonzi, you know, the EFF member of parliament, and I think these are interesting questions. Some of their, you know, approach could be a little bit better. But what we are seeing is we are seeing new blood, we are seeing new chairpersons, we are seeing a much more robust engagement. Is this a new era? Is this a new era in the way that our parliamentary process is opened up, what we see engaged and how it's engaged again with the portfolio on higher education and watching what went down with Minister Ngabane there, former Minister Ngabane? Is this a new way? And is this the direction in which we would like to see it go?
Yeah, if you're asking me, I think coalitions, as some will regard what we have as a bit of a coalition government, really. But this is our new reality. I don't think anybody's going to get 50% of the vote for many years to come. And so there's going to have to be a lot more negotiation, a lot more understanding, a lot more discussion that takes place in the back rooms, whereas in the past that never happened. So it is our reality, but it doesn't solve everything. And I think you're quite right, Sia. There are agendas behind the scenes. Although I think so much of the ANC's funding comes from government funds anyway, so they're not really yes. beholden to too many of the big funders from the outside. Their modus operandi has been to suck money out of the system.
Yes,
and they're being threatened with that now. And that's their downfall. That's the challenge that they're going
to have. Well, there's not much money left in the system to suck out.
Yeah, well, there always is. There's a 1.8 trillion rand worth of budget. Our reality, when we look at what's happening, if that money could flow to where it should flow, we would be extremely wealthy as a nation. If we could get the money to deliver the services, what happens is we get one RDP house for every three we pay for. We get 1 kilometer of road for every 3 kilometers we pay for. I'm saying three because roughly there's a 300% markup in so many things that are purchased and done. And so we are always going to be on the back foot, and that's why you will have potholed roads, traffic lights that don't work, maintenance is the last thing they're going to get to because they have to spend that money elsewhere.
So your interest is always in looking at the systemic problems
yes.
and how they continue.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Perpetuate themselves.
They reinvent themselves.
Yeah.
Yes.
They reinvent themselves.
Exactly.
So, and if I hear you correctly, Wayne, you're saying, you know, even councillors at the lowest level, yeah. where the councillors are going, yeah, I'm here to be part of the whatever feeding trough yes. there is. Mm. Can we change this? Do you think there is an opportunity to change it?
I think so. It's not going to change by itself.
Okay.
Which is why I don't believe that the relief we're getting now from intense load shedding, for an example, is permanent. And I don't think that the fact that we have water sometimes, that's not a given. I think we're going to see less water unless we make a decision as the general public that we want to know who decided what value for money was, how those contracts were given. There are portfolio committees that do that, but they sit within the same structure.
Mm.
And then the civil society on the outside. And I think this is going to sound like heresy and anathema, but I'm going to say it.
Heresy.
We need to admit the fact. You said that the ANC is not beholden to big donors. They get their money from the system.
Mm.
We need to accept the fact that a lot of contract payouts, so your taxpayers' money, goes back to let's call it parties. Let's not focus on the ANC, because that's the system the ANC is going to maintain, so that any other party that tries to replace them will get corrupted as well and become just like not much of an alternative, which is where I think that the horse trading with the other parties, that's what it's meant to lead to down the line. Once we accept that money will flow back, the question we have to ask ourselves is how much of that is an acceptable amount to flow back, and what does value for money that does for the how many RDP houses do we get for three?
Mm.
We want maybe 2.5. We want 3.
I'd say we want 3 for
three. We want 3 for 3. For. So now we're fighting.
Nothing must flow back.
They've
just increased the amount that they're allocating to political parties. Like,
yes.
You know, in the budgets, this is it. And if you, they don't even mention, by the way, in
that's the visible budget. Money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the provinces, you must see the money as well that is allocated. The provinces actually give more money than the national. So, and there's no formula. So you will have, for instance, I can't remember if it was the Free State or Mpumalanga, where more money flows to political party funding than in Gauteng. Yeah, so
but would that be true in the Western Cape, or is that just the one province?
The Western Cape is the lowest.
Exactly.
They don't take as much money out. And then they look at this, and you'd expect them to also say, well, we'll have the same formula. We are spending money, taxpayers' money, on political party funding far too high now. It's got a little bit out of hand. And then they still take.
Wayne, for a person who's built an organization on the idea of holding the purse holder accountable for our tax and how it is spent. How do you see the involvement of all of us citizens in terms of holding not just the executive, but even at provincial, even our councillors accountable? How do we get 3 RDP houses
out of 3
for the 3 we pay for?
So for us, the adage of transparency is the enemy of corruption.
Yes.
If we can get the allocations of funds, the start of the projects, the timing, the end, and the quality of what's happening with that spend into the eyes, or the people's eyes on that. So procurement is the first start, first place. If procurement can be transparent, and this is what they've been talking about for years, but they don't really want it because of this whole patronage and money-making scheme. But imagine, for instance, the community in the Eastern Cape, I forget the town, knew ahead of time that there was a set of toilets being built at a school for 12 million rand. You know, six toilets or whatever, before the time. They would not have allowed that to happen. They would not have allowed that project to even start or the tender to be allocated. But because it all happens, it's not transparent. Oh, what happened here? How much did we pay? It's too late. The contract is gone. Half the time they're gone before the even project is started. So what we would like to see is this transparent procurement at local level, and it can Treasury can manage all of this, by the way, that there it is, in your town, in your city, in your province, as a tender for a sewage pipeline, new roads, hardy houses. This is the contractor, this is the amount, straight away. You see, but why are we paying 3 million rand for an RDP house? Yeah, we can build a mansion for that. See what I'm saying?
Is that even possible? You know, I think about all of the stuff I have to worry about in my day-to-day life.
But there's right? somebody
Between
in your
getting
community
my child to school on time and everything else. Is it even feasible to ask citizens?
But there are people, you know it, in every community, there are people that are passionate about this stuff. They will be your eyes and ears. You know, they will do the stuff. They will. It's like you have these community associations, and there's somebody heading it up, and they do good work in this space. Mm-hmm. And there are organizations out there that will go and do all of that monitoring. Mm-hmm. Problem is, they're going to be funded as well.
Can I propose what a structure that looks like that could do this would look like? It would have to be contractors who want to get the contracts but don't want to cheat. They don't want to rob the public. They would first of all have to form an organization that says reinforce that we're going to force. Yes. And they would have to have lawyers. They would have to have some kind of media relations system, even funding. Not necessarily to say we're buying particular types of stories from you. It's just an indication of goodwill. The list of services they would have to have would be long. And then they would say, look, because here's my belief. Our existing anti-corruption laws are really good. They haven't worked. They're good in principle, but they haven't gotten the big arrest that we need. They haven't worked. I think we have to own the fact that people who pay parties and then deliver one RDP house for three are not going to jail.
Yeah.
I believe we need to have a system where entrepreneurs are going to say, listen, political parties, we're going to charge you a lowered amount because it's for the public. It's not a private sector contract. We're going to deliver three RDP houses for three. Maybe there will be party funding through an intermediary or whatever. But at the end of the day, the ultimate test of whether it's going to be whether we deliver three for three, good value, good public value for money. It's a form of realism where we stop moralizing about corruption and we start saying to political parties, we know you only listen to people who pay you. Let's face the reality. You're going to get a portion. It's going to be public. It's going to work through a technically legal intermediary, but everyone's going to have eyes on it. So you get your cut and you behave.
Do we have enough South Africans that feel that way? I feel like South Africans, by and large, actually only hate corruption when it works for the other guy. If they could get it to work for them, they would be okay with corruption.
This makes it work for everyone. Which actually makes us, how are we defining corruption? Me, it's robbing the value. It's robbing the public of value for money.
Yeah.
That is the bottom line definition of corruption. It is not necessarily that I paid a political party, donated to a political party from my profits after I delivered value for money.
The problem is so much of money doesn't even go to the political party. The middlemen costs.
The middleman.
To individuals. So what you'll find is a tender, every tender we see, the mindset is in at local government levels in corrupt municipalities and provinces and at national, it's a case of, right, here's a big project. There's a lot of money to be spent.
Mm.
But who's going to get a slice of this pie? And
exactly.
You'll find, you know, if it's a premier involved, where's our slice? Where's ours? And then, and it's not necessarily going to the party. It's going to the individuals themselves and all the companies. We watch the money flow. Let me tell you, at the CETAs, we've seen the money, how it flows. Yeah, the sectoral education training authorities where they will have contracts, and then you see the money flowing, and this individual and that individual, and then they buy properties. They start laundering the money. I mean, we're working closely with the legal authorities and some of these things. It's the typical laundering pattern and modus operandi, but my goodness, you know, three or four companies out of Services CETA scored 330 million rand out of a process. 330 million.
Wow.
And we didn't need to spend 1 cent of that. Now, here's the youth that is supposed to be uplifted in training and development. You know what we could have done with that money? But these guys have gone with it now. And to me, coming back to this procurement and transparency, Treasury has got a process called Restricted Supplier Database, which means you've been found wanting, you've been found being corrupt or running off with the money, not delivering the service properly. The municipalities and the provinces and the government departments can report that, put them on the – not only the company, because they just change the company name, the directors of those companies.
Like a blacklist.
Yeah. Onto this restricted supply. In other words, you may not do business with government ever again. Mm. They don't do it. It's useless. It's useless. And you find inconsistencies like Bain gets put on there because the UK puts us under pressure, but McKinsey and SAP and ABB aren't. And they've all done the same thing.
And those are not small companies.
Yeah,
those
companies
are international organizations.
They should have been banned from doing business with government in this country. A KPMG, all of them, who were hands were deep in the till of those stuff. Like Bain, they apologized, they paid back. But only Bain gets, what's going on here? So we're inconsistent. That's accountability as well. That's another form of accountability, which we must start practicing.
So then transparency, accountability, all of these things, what you're also talking about is you're talking about a willingness of the individuals in the system.
Mm.
Is there political will from our executive all the way from the top to do any of these things? Do you think that there is political will? Do you think that they care, they want to, from our executive, from the president right down to...
I don't think there is, but let's see. not enough.
Not enough.
Ian, why would you fix something that works for you at that moment? Because look at the – we had a commission for Zondo. Now we're having a national dialogue that costs almost 700 million rand. Mm. If you can stall and stall and stall, why would you want to fix it? If your car is making noises but it's still getting you from point A to point B – Why pay the mechanic?
Mm. No, I think there is a lack of political will. And that's, for me, a compromise. The president and all his connected people in cabinet, his leadership. If you allowed the rule of law to flow, if you had a strong, robust criminal justice system, well-resourced, following the money at SARS, and blocking the flow of money that shouldn't happen. If you had SIU, NPA, Hawks working together, the police, every one of them, following our laws in this country, there would be a lot of people that are in positions of power in jail.
Yes.
Right now, you know, if it flowed properly, right now you get try and get a court date within 2 years, you're lucky, so you deny justice now. And the president doesn't want to change that because the ANC is compromised. They are heavily compromised. And so why change? Yeah, I agree.
I really am convinced change is going to come from communities backing entrepreneurs who want to deliver value for money.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And I say this, I do not know the first thing about building a toilet. I don't know the first thing about a bridge, so I'm not speaking. I don't know anyone who does personally, but I do know that it is only when communities say, we have vetted this guy. We know that his contract is, the contract he's bidding for is, or the tender is bidding for is worth X amount. The deliverable would have to look like this. Let's all get eyes on it.
Yeah.
And we will support the political party that champions. So if a party runs a specific municipality or a province and they champion getting that particular contractor to deliver that product and they protect them, then that's the party we want. So it starts with looking at who the contractors in the, who are going into procurement are, because we can source those from our own communities.
Yeah,
you can become, Nick, I really believe if there's a service or a good that you can become that person, and mean as self, I will back you. I'll campaign for you, not politics. I'll campaign for the contractors.
No, I mean I think that sounds wonderful. It sounds wonderful, but it's very ideological. I've just come back from KZN, as I was telling you guys, and South Africa is mainly rural. Most of South Africa is rural. Whether you are in Kijani, or you are in Dundee, or you are, you know, in Kunu, those people in those communities do not have this network that you are talking about, and largely also underserviced, undereducated, and underinformed.
So, that's the big thing, underinformed.
And where there is no political will, how do we get more of those communities engaged and involved?
And they're left to fend for themselves, and with less and less flowing there. So you see the post office closing down offices. The post office has a social mandate. You see SABC struggling to survive. It has a social mandate. So it is the rural people and the poor that suffer the most from this degradation of service delivery. So much money has to flow into the rural areas. And sadly, we see more and more people slipping into poverty than out of poverty, because we have a government that is not focused on what is the best, what's in the best interest of the people. So it's just so sad for us to watch these contracts and tenders going out. And then even then, at SANRAL, for instance, they will give tenders to a Chinese company who brings in Chinese people to fix labor. And do the labor. We've got our own labor, people looking for jobs. And when it's gone, they go back. Or some of them just stay here. And it's wrong. I don't want to sound xenophobic or anything, you know. Nothing wrong with bringing in Chinese or having Chinese contractors and that. But makes sense. And all of those, by the way, or most of them that we've seen, they never finish the project on time, so they get in with a very cheap quote, and then, we've got this problem that has arisen and that problem. And we end up paying more than double than what the original tender was. But they're too, you know, we're too stuck in the project, so we can't get rid of them. And some of them don't even finish, and we have to start again. We've seen it here, Lillian Goya Street. I mean, the contractor, here he is. That contractor, we looked at him. That contractor was known to the city of Joburg for not finishing projects off and overcharging. Known.
Sure.
That's what makes him reliable.
Yeah.
From a political perspective.
Exactly. So he's reliable in the fact that we're going to get our cut.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you've got another contractor and another contractor.
But we just stated the solution. So we've got labor around. And a few months ago, I had lunch with somebody who used to be a water engineer for a government agency. I don't know which one. And she said she used to get people coming in all the time, pitching solutions that could work. And so here we are in Johannesburg. This is not a rural area. Yeah. We're here. We've got problems with water. We're surrounded by labor and by people who've got solutions and no uptake from government.
Yeah.
We, the people of Johannesburg, if we wanted to, could back those people and their solutions. We just never found out who they were. So now the next time I have lunch with a water engineer, I will start making, I will start connecting the dots. Who are these engineers most likely? What are their solutions? Where are they? How do we map them? Who knows about them? Because once we start backing, we talk about job creation, we talk about support small business. The small businesses who force government to output value for money are the small businesses we need to be supporting more than anybody else.
Small businesses are the solution to this country.
Yes. And the small businesses, sorry, but the small businesses who keep supporting are, I don't mean to disparage anybody's hustle, but somebody is selling a thing that is not going to fix the water problem. They're selling shoes, socks, nails, they're selling bags, and we support them. If somebody comes along and says, I can fix water, we don't, it's not sexy. I'm sorry. Like, it's not, it doesn't jump up on your Instagram.
It's not sexy until you can't open the tap.
It's not on your Instagram. So there we are, flooding the Instagram pages of people who are selling cosmetics. I'm sorry. Like, again, I don't want to just, that those are valuable things in another context. But we don't know the people who can fix the problems we have. So we're not backing them, and we're not telling our political parties, guys, if you don't look at the solutions these people are talking about, we're going to riot. Here's the solution. So our demand is no longer just fix water. It's talk to these five entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
So community activism is what you're talking about.
Meets entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
And community activism. And I think when, as a person in the room who has started at the activist level and then organization, how hard is it for civil society, like yourselves, to hold the administration accountable? Is it hard at all?
Well, it's hard only because there's just so much of it. So it's like a massive tsunami. But it's not difficult because we use what we call owning the narrative, a process that puts government on the back foot, and we shine the spotlight on the issues. So right now, part of our rolling strategy. After this, I go off and protest outside the construction CETA's offices because we want the CEO removed, not because of anything else other than we've got enough evidence to show that Mr. Shezi has not run that organization in the best interest of this country. He is removing people that get in the way of corruption, standing their ground, trumped up charges. He just removed the sixth person on his 12-person hit list that he's got. He wants them out because they stand their ground. And we got to look after those people. So for us, it's about, I mean, I remember Andile Nongogo running Services CETA, where we used to saw the 330 million rand. He becomes the CEO of NSFAS. And we start putting the light, shining the light, lighting the fire in his kitchen, and Bladen Zamande response in the media is there's nothing wrong. We've had a look, everything's fine. Really? Mm-hmm. After what we've told you, here's the reports. Now tell us it's all fine. Nothing. No, eventually, the heat got so hot.
Suspended.
He had to fire him. No, he had to fire him, which I was quite surprised.
Eventually.
And then we said, and your chairperson, Ernest Khoza, and eventually he had to resign because he knew he was going to get pushed. Still the chairperson of the South African Aviation Authority, Civil Aviation Authority, nonetheless. So that's our modus operandi. It's also litigation. We've had to go to court to stop things. We had to go to court to get information. So it's a cross-section of engaging the powers, doing good investigations, working with the whistleblowers, and just putting the spotlight on. And we do it on the driver's license contract, so we stop that from being issued. There was another corrupt deal. The vehicle testing centers, the CETAs are just a cesspool of corruption. Those two big departments, higher education and transport, poor old Barbara Creasy. When I eventually had a chat with Minister Nkabane, you could see. And we just said to her, you have inherited the biggest corrupt network in this country. And I got a sense that if she'd known what she was stepping into before she was offered that role, she probably would have said, I don't want it.
I don't think so. Yeah. Nobody ever says I don't want it. I don't want that opportunity.
I think they can get in and fix it, but my goodness, it's big. So, you know, are we winning? The answer to that question from our side is, if we weren't doing what we're doing, this country would have lost several billions extra. We've stopped the Guptas taking out just on one bank account that had the rehabilitation funds for the Tegeta mine, 1.8 billion rand. They were trying to move it out. It's government's role to protect that and not let it leave the country. And they did nothing. Gwede Mantashe did nothing. We had to run to court to interdict that transaction. It's crazy that we have to do government's work. And now we're this afternoon in a discussion with environmentalists saying, what's happening to mine rehabilitation? Because the communities, mines are in the rural areas. You talk about rural areas suffering. These guys, there's something like 6,000 mines that have stopped. They're abandoned.
They just walk away and they leave.
And the communities suffer from the runoff, from the erosion, yep. the acid mine drainage, the degradation of the environment. And we look at our government and say to a Minister of Minerals and Energy, are you – this is your role. There's the law. Are you policing this? Are you monitoring? Are you auditing this? And they look away. No, no, no. What do you want us to do? So it's crazy.
So owning the narrative is quite an important part. And you work in media. Is there still sufficient media outlets that are able to hold that role of a third estate that holds the transparency, the government, and informing people? You know, the right. SABC is struggling. Sunday Times have closed down their outlet. You know, there's in that space.
Right.
There's a lot of problems and the hole developing there. Is there enough?
So this is why I believe that the new entrepreneurs that we'll be supporting who can do the remediation of mining sites, for an example, and all of those, would have a special responsibility to support traditional media, because one of the things our politicians and governments, let me say, around the world are becoming very good at, you don't have to create an alternative narrative. You just have to create enough interference and static around the whatever one anybody else is trying to create. So you send out bots onto mainstream media to contest narratives that media is trying to put on. There's all sorts of ways to manipulate the funding and donor scene around media, around traditional media. So you see more and more media houses closing. At one point, we had Bob Pottinger and what else have we seen where the Guptas had the new age. Mm-hmm. I will not comment on the quality.
It didn't last.
But it's very easy for government to say we're also going to contest the media narrative space and just the stories that get told about government, which is why I do believe that if we as society want entrepreneurs who are actually going to fix the problems, those entrepreneurs have a special duty. Once you get your contracts, we want to know, are you donating to civil society, to media, to traditional media, and so on and so forth. And I also do believe that, look, political parties are going to get their funding from somewhere. Mm. Are you delivering value for money and also being involved politically enough? I this is such a sensitive area because the line between that and full-on corruption is so fine. But let's be realistic. Parties are going to find their funding from somewhere. And they're going to increase their budgets within government. So we as society have to look at, are we in solving unemployment and in supporting new entrepreneurs who are going to fix the mines, who are going to fix the pipes, are they active at those fronts? Are they being good citizens in terms of funding media and so on and so forth?
Mm. Sure, it sounds like a big job for civil society, but it does also sound like we as South Africans who love our country need to be far more engaged than we currently are. And we have to get more people on the side of the good of the whole.
Yes.
Can be just as lucrative for the individual.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think we have the luxury to hear it often, I pay my taxes, so I shouldn't get involved. We are a unique country. We have our unique issues, and we have to get involved. You have to become active as citizens. And what we mean by that is you don't have to go out there and do the actual work sometimes. As CS says, support somebody or support a civil society organization that's doing the work on your behalf anyway. And if there are organizations that are defending our democracy against corruption and waste of taxpayers' money, you know, then get behind them and just support them. That makes you an active citizen. Or get out there and help your community clean the parks, clean up your neighborhood. I was attending a session in Bedford View where this community they now put all the signs back up that are falling over. They clean the pavements. They do the work of local government that the municipality should do. And others say, why are we doing that? We pay our rates and taxes. So you don't have to. You don't have to do anything. But we do this because it uplifts our market. It makes our area look beautiful. One individual, I forget his surname, fixed up the Wilds Park in Joburg. Beautiful story. Yes. He wouldn't go in there. It was a mess. He went, started slowly. Today, 10,000 people visit that park every month. It's really? Safe. Yeah. Wow. Yes. Done beautiful work. One individual becomes active. 10 people join him. Another 20. And so you have an active community, and you, and everybody can go and enjoy the park, and there, and there's no more muggings and robberies, and that's for us.
It's a stunning place.
So I love that. I love. Chilemo Atlante had a conference. I listened to this youngster in a rural area. It says, "We run our own government here. Here's our minister of health. What does he do? He goes to the chemist and get the gogos medicine. Our minister of education, they make sure that the kids have a safe creche and after school a safe place to be." That's, I love that beautiful ingenuity of localizing this managing your own community and solutions. It's beautiful. We must do more of that because we're an amazing country. I always say, you know, Australia has a rock and a kangaroo and a barrier reef, and they've got more tourists than us. And then the arse end of the world takes days to get there. We're one night stop, overnight flight from Europe. We should have double their tourists. We've got diversity. We've got flora, fauna. We've got weather. We've got beauty. We've got everything going for us, our cultural diversity. And we don't have as much tourists as them. That's, something's wrong. We've got to fix that.
I think South Africa is an amazing place, and I think South Africans are amazing.
Yes.
And these two South Africans, for me this morning, have been just as amazing. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming in and having this conversation with us. I really enjoyed it. And if anyone takes anything away from this conversation, is that each and every one of us have a role to play in keeping our councillor, our city, our mayor, everybody accountable, but also keeping our communities safe and working.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
I was going to add one thing.
Say it.
Add it.
Okay. You can add it in. If you are too busy fetching the children from school and life is just lifing, to really get involved in any other way, find one person in your family whom you know would deliver a good government contract, and start talking with that person. And start connecting with maybe me or somebody else who's forming that network, because we can form a support structure around them to get them in without them becoming corrupt.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. And I want to also add, I think we are more united as a nation than the politicians would like us to believe.
Correct.
Research shows that. So we mustn't let our politicians divide us. We are an amazing country with amazing people, amazing diversity.
We are. We absolutely are.
Great. Right.